Today is Wednesday, February 10th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, former U.S. President Donald Trump's impeachment trial begins.
We cannot have presidents inciting and mobilizing mob violence against our government and our institutions because they refuse to accept the will of the people.
Also ahead, South Africa pauses rollout of the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine.
But experts say the AstraZeneca vaccine should still protect against severe disease and death from COVID-19.
Plus, a new UN report into North Korea's missile program. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in Myanmar, where protesters took to the streets for a fifth day today, vowing to keep up demonstrations against last week's military coup. The protests have continued despite reports of gunshot wounds among protesters. The United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Myanmar said that security forces and police have a duty under international law to refrain from using excessive force against peaceful demonstrators. Thomas Andrews said that, quote, Myanmar military personnel and police need to know that following orders is no defense for committing atrocities, end quote. Andrews also said that, quote, hundreds of arbitrary detentions, end quote, had been recorded in Myanmar since the February 1st coup, and that some people were being detained incommunicado. For more on the protests in Myanmar, Libby Hogan of Reuters has this report.
Yangon youth turned on a colorful display at a rally against the military coup in Myanmar on Wednesday. Some staged a sleep-in, wearing pajamas and holding placards that read, I can't sleep because of the coup. Others sat in blow-up swimming pools calling for democracy. The images were in stark contrast to a day before, when the country experienced the most violent protest seen yet since February 1st, when the military seized power. On Tuesday, three protesters were injured from suspected rubber bullet wounds in the capital, Naypyidaw. And a doctor told Reuters one woman was expected to die after being shot in the head with a bullet. Yangon local Tet Shar Ko called for justice for those injured yesterday.
Our sister got shot with live ammunition yesterday. Her condition is critical right now. Now we see the military is taking brutal action against us. But we young people will lead the protest from various groups in every peaceful way.
The US and the UN have condemned the use of force against protesters. Thousands of people joined demonstrations in the main city of Yangon, and in the capital, Naypyidaw, hundreds of government workers marched in support of a growing civil disobedience campaign. A group of police in Kaya State in the east also joined the protesters and marched in uniform with a sign that said, "We don't want dictatorship," according to pictures published in media. Junta leader General Min Aung Hlaing promised on Monday to hold a new election, but gave no time frame, citing unproven allegations of election fraud for justifying their takeover. The military have issued a state of emergency to last for 1 year. Despite a ban on gatherings of more than four people in the country's biggest cities, protesters have continued to demand the release of National League for Democracy's Aung San Suu Kyi and other detainees. They also want the 2008 constitution drawn up under the military to be abolished. Alongside the protest, the growing civil disobedience movement affecting hospitals, schools and government offices shows no sign of ending.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan. The unrest in Myanmar has drawn condemnation from the U.S. State Department. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has that story.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price again called on the military junta in the country formerly known as Burma to relinquish power and respect the rights of peaceful protesters. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
What I would say broadly is that we strongly condemn violence against demonstrators, All individuals in Burma have rights to freedom of expression, association, peaceful assembly, including for the purposes of peaceful protest.
The massive protests defying restrictions are in line with one analyst's expectations. Josh Kurlanskik of the Council on Foreign Relations.
But in terms of the Myanmar people's sort of spirit and desire to not have this military coup and to have some restoration of democracy, no, I'm not surprised.
Other experts say there is little that the United States can do to influence Myanmar's generals because the head of the junta, Min Aung Hlaing, is already under U.S. sanctions. Greg Pauling of the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
He was sanctioned under the Global Magnitsky Act along with other senior generals in 2019 for their ethnic cleansing campaign against the Rohingya. So how do you sanction somebody who's already banned from owning property in the U.S., traveling to the U.S., or doing business with Americans?
Experts say with so little leverage on Myanmar, the best option for the U.S. is to work closely with other countries.
So the U.S. would want to work with democracies in Europe, Canada, Japan, maybe some of the Southeast Asian countries like Singapore, Indonesia, with India also. So there's definitely going to be a need for multilateralism here because there's no way the U.S. can really affect much policy change in Myanmar by itself.
The State Department's Ned Price said Myanmar has been a constant topic in America's engagement with allies around the world this week. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump resumes Wednesday in the U.S. Senate. Senators will have to decide if Trump incited the deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol a month ago by urging his supporters to confront lawmakers as they were certifying that Democrat Joe Biden had defeated Trump in the 2020 election. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more about the trial process thus far.
Last month's deadly riot at the U.S. Capitol now leading to a first in U.S. history. A former president under trial in the U.S. Senate.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye.
Trump charged with inciting that mob to riot.
When you catch somebody in a fraud, you're allowed to go by very different rules.
After falsely claiming he won the 2020 election and telling his supporters to fight the certification of Electoral College results for Joe Biden. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The gravest charges ever brought against a president of the United States in American history.
More than 200 people have now been charged in connection with the January 6 riot, a day lawmakers warned will be an inspiration for domestic extremism and presidential abuse of power. House impeachment manager, Representative Jamie Raskin.
This cannot be the future of America. We cannot have presidents inciting and mobilizing mob violence against our government and our institutions because they refuse to accept the will of the people.
The U.S. National Guard says that by mid-March, it will have spent almost $500 million in additional security for the U.S. Capitol since the January 6 attack. In the trial's first day, Democrats laid out their argument for Trump's guilt. House impeachment manager, Representative David Cicilline.
We will prove with overwhelming evidence that President Trump is singularly and directly responsible for inciting the assault on the Capitol.
And argued Trump must face consequences even though he is no longer president. House impeachment manager, Representative Joe Neguse.
Presidents can't inflame insurrection in their final weeks and then walk away like nothing happened.
Conviction requires a two-thirds vote of the U.S. Senate. Assuming all 50 Democrats vote to convict, that means 17 Republican senators would also have to find Trump guilty. If Trump is convicted, senators will vote again to decide if he is barred from ever again running for office. His lawyers argued that was the true reason for what they called a politically motivated impeachment. Counsel for former President Donald Trump, David Schoen.
For a great many Americans see this process for exactly what it is, a chance by a group of partisan politicians from the American political scene and seeking to disenfranchise 74 million plus American voters. and those who dare to share their political beliefs and vision of America.
The trial, which resumes Wednesday with 16 hours for each side to present arguments and evidence, will run through at least Sunday. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Also in the U.S., larger numbers of immigrants' families have been crossing the U.S.-Mexico border in the first weeks of President Joe Biden's term. The AP's Julie Walker reports.
Warning signs are emerging of the border crisis that marked former President Trump's term. Hundreds of newly released immigrants are getting dropped off with nonprofit groups, and there are growing accounts of prolonged detention in short-term facilities. Measures to control the virus have sharply cut space in holding facilities that got overwhelmed during a surge of arrivals in 2018 and 19. To deal with the new influx, the Border Patrol on Tuesday reopened a large tent facility in South Texas for children and families. Meanwhile, long-term facilities for kids who cross alone are 80% full. I'm Julie Walker.
This is VOA. 20 United Nations peacekeepers were injured, including several seriously, in central Mali today when their base came under fire, a UN mission spokesman said. The spokesman for the MINUSMA mission, Olivier Salgado, told Reuters that the base was attacked this morning. He said the UN mission's chief firmly condemns the attack and has ordered all measures taken to treat the wounded. Salgado did not say who was responsible. However, Islamist militant groups linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State regularly attack UN peacekeepers and Malian soldiers in the area. Some 204 people remain unaccounted for since Sunday's flash flood disaster in India's Uttarakhand state. On Wednesday, rescuers in northern India failed to find signs of life using a drone to search for 35 construction workers who were missing inside a tunnel after the flood swept down a mountain valley, destroying dams and bridges. So far, police say 32 bodies have been retrieved from the Himalayan mountainsides or pulled out of the Dauliganga River further downstream. The flash flood was initially thought to have been caused by a glacier breaking apart and crashing into the river, but some scientists now say it was more likely due to an avalanche. Listening to International Edition on the Voice of America, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Now we take a look at COVID-19. South Africa's government has paused the rollout of AstraZeneca's vaccine amid concerns over its efficacy against mild and moderate cases of COVID-19. The change in plans has added to mistrust of vaccines, even though they have been shown to be effective against serious cases of the coronavirus. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
As a South African nurse, Lerato Mthunzi sometimes vaccinates others, but she says there's no way she'll take a COVID-19 shot, even though experts say it's safe.
Hell no, we will not be taking this vaccine until there are clinical trials that assures healthcare workers that indeed this vaccine is safe.
Data has shown an AstraZeneca vaccine, 1 million doses of which arrived in South Africa a week ago, offers minimal protection against mild to moderate infection by the dominant variant in the country. That's prompted the government to pause a rollout of the vaccine, and it's only added to Mthunzi's scepticism. But experts say the AstraZeneca vaccine should still protect against severe disease and death from COVID-19. Professor Shabir Mahdi, a vaccinologist at the University of Witwatersrand who led South Africa's analysis of the AstraZeneca vaccine, says the shot still has a role to play in Africa and across the world.
It doesn't make any sense to have 1 million doses of vaccine available to us, which are known to be safe, and not to start distributing it, at least for high-risk groups.
But mistrust is still high. The Indaba Nurses Union, to which Mthunzi belongs, has advised its 17,000 members to boycott the vaccine. And a poll by the University of Johannesburg suggested a third of South Africans would refuse it. On the streets of Johannesburg, Thato Mlete says she's one of them.
No, I will not be taking the vaccine. I am not comfortable at all about it, and I will not advise anyone to go for it unless you're brave enough, but for me, it's a no.
Such concerns are not uncommon on a continent where big pharmaceutical companies have run dubious clinical trials in the past, resulting in deaths. In South Africa, trust in the government's handling of the pandemic has also deteriorated over perceived failures such as a shortage of protective equipment and allegations of corruption in COVID-19 relief contracts.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. In the U.S., about 28 million people have received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, but the rollout has not been smooth, and some people are accused of jumping to the head of the line. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has that story.
While most of the United States' highest-risk population waits to get the COVID-19 vaccine, Mark Sussman, a D.C. resident, has gotten his two doses of the Moderna vaccine.
I certainly took opportunity of a broken system.
He's only 36 years old, with no special health conditions, and thus not yet within the eligibility criteria.
I happen to live four blocks from a grocery store here in D.C. I gave them the pharmacy a call to ask if my wife and I could be put on a wait list. They had extras after some no-shows.
Once thought, vaccines have a shelf life of 6 hours. So finding someone to give them to instead of throwing them away has been a priority for some pharmacists. 31-year-old David McMillan, who is also not in the priority pool, benefited from the loophole. McMillan was randomly chosen to get a shot while picking up groceries at a Giant food store in the U.S. Capitol.
The rollout of the vaccine has been, you know, rough. I'm glad I was able to get it, but the fact that they had extra doses and they didn't have a system in place for that is disappointing.
Giant's spokesman, Daniel Wolk, told VOA that cases like McMillan's are rare and that the chain's pharmacists are following all Washington's health department guidelines. Confidence in the vaccine is growing, but the supply is still short. For those waiting, patience is growing thin with online registration sites that seem stuck and no appointments available. At this community pharmacy in Alexandria, Virginia, vaccine hopefuls showed up unannounced. At one point, the owner was forced to stop the process. Pharmacy owner, Judy Goulilat.
People were like lining from here to there all the way and they start fighting. And everybody's like wants to take the vaccination. So it really breaks my heart. And sometimes you have to say no to them.
To get things under control, the Alexandria Health Department has forbidden walk-ins and built a standby system to discourage line jumpers while still preventing waste. Population Health Manager Natalie Tallis.
We have extra lists of people who are eligible that our different partners can call and say, hey, can you be here really quickly because we have this extra vaccine. We really just need to prioritize the people who are at highest risk of severe disease and death.
In their 70s, the Dexters are in the at-risk tier. They have followed all the protocols and are patiently waiting for their second vaccine dose. They wish others would follow suit.
If indeed there are people jumping the line, you know, that's a shame. I think that those people are depriving, you know, first responders and other and people with really serious medical conditions from getting their protection first.
I would have liked to have seen a coordinated national effort established very early on. It would have taken away a lot of the uncertainty in certain areas of the country about who goes first and how do you get this done.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has granted emergency use authorization to a combination antibody therapy developed by pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly to fight COVID-19. Gloria So of Reuters reports.
Eli Lilly's combination antibody therapy to fight COVID-19 has been granted emergency use authorization in the United States. The company announced Tuesday its antibody drug had been authorized by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration after data from a late-stage trial in January showed it helped cut the risk of hospitalization and death in COVID-19 patients by 70%. Eli Lilly's therapy combines two antibodies, bamlanivimab and etesevimab, and is similar to the experimental medication touted by former U.S. President Donald Trump after he was hospitalized with COVID-19 last October. In a statement, the company said the therapy was authorized for the treatment of, quote, mild to moderate COVID-19 in patients aged 12 or older who are at high risk of progressing to severe COVID-19 and or hospitalization. But the FDA said the drug would not be authorized for patients who are already hospitalized due to COVID-19 or require oxygen therapy. Eli Lilly added that 100,000 doses would be ready immediately, and an additional 150,000 doses would be available throughout the first quarter. The company says they plan to manufacture up to 1 million doses by mid-2021 in collaboration with American biotech company Amgen. Last November, the FDA approved Eli Lilly's single antibody treatment.
That was Gloria So of Reuters. A United Nations report says North Korea has used cyber attacks to steal hundreds of millions of dollars to fund its nuclear program and ballistic missile capabilities. Henry Ridgewell has more.
The leaked United Nations report says North Korea managed to bolster both its nuclear and missile programs in 2020, despite being subject to a raft of international sanctions. It highlights new ballistic missiles that have been on display in recent parades, which the report says could be large enough to carry nuclear warheads and put the entire United States in range. Pyongyang boasted in January of developing what it claimed to be the world's most powerful weapon, a submarine-launched ballistic missile. The report says North Korea financed the military expansion with $300 million stolen through cyber hacks and online fraud. Sojin Lim is a career analyst at the University of Central Lancashire in Britain.
The nuclear program is the only surviving strategy for North Korea, especially for Kim's family's the regime survival. And recently, because of the COVID-19 situation, their economic situation has become even worse. And especially with the new administration in the States, with Biden, the new President Biden, the North Korea has no other way to discuss, to negotiate with the America.
The report was written by independent monitors for the UN Security Council's North Korea Sanctions Committee and leaked to Reuters Tuesday. North Korea is subject to a range of multilateral and unilateral sanctions, but they have not worked, argues Lim.
North Korea has been successful in finding new ways to mobilizing finance, and you know, this cyber attack with this amount of, it's lots of money, then that makes me even convinced that sanctions do not work, and we really need to find out new frame to approach to North Korea now.
In the past decade, North Korea has conducted a series of missile and nuclear tests of escalating size. Former U.S. President Donald Trump met North Korean leader Kim Jong-un three times in 2018 and 2019, but the negotiations failed to persuade Pyongyang to give up its nuclear weapons. The new administration under President Joe Biden is working on a new approach. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan spoke to reporters February 4th.
That review is underway and that we will consult closely with our allies, particularly the ROK in Japan, in doing that.
Despite the U.S. pledge of a new approach to Pyongyang, most experts see little hope of imminent progress towards denuclearization of the Korea Peninsula. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News.
That's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer Nadia Taha and our managing editor Kate Pound-Dawson, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
This is Press Conference USA guest host Kim Lewis.
Join me and VOA senior TV correspondent Chris Simpkins as we discuss the great migration of African Americans with author and historian Jesse Holland. We'll discuss how it shaped the political, social, and cultural landscape of America. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.